Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hi there, and thanks a lot for joining me again today. I really do appreciate it. Hope you're having a great weekend. Lots to talk about coming up over the next hour, including updates on the measles and bird flu outbreaks in the U.S. We'll also hear about a new WashU study on possible cancer causes in younger Americans. And we'll find out about a new sickle cell treatment center at Barnes Jewish Hospital. But first, let's start the show the way we always do with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Yeah, Fred, it's always my pleasure.
Dr. Buchholz, the CDC is out with a new warning about the measles in the U.S. The measles has been deemed eliminated here for more than two decades. But now the CDC warns that declaration may be at risk because of this latest outbreak. Let's hear about that outbreak from CNN health correspondent Jacqueline Howard. She talked with CNN host Sarah Seidner.
So far this year, we've seen more than 100 measles cases reported across the country. This is in 17 different states and New York City. And as you said, in the year 2000, we eliminated the measles virus here in the U.S. That was a huge public health achievement. And we were able to do that because of high vaccination coverage. But recently, we've seen declines in vaccinations. Many outbreaks are occurring in pockets of communities with low vaccination rates. And just this week, health officials warned we need to do more to make sure people are getting vaccinated, to rapidly investigate new cases. Because, Sarah, according to the CDC, if the measles outbreak continues for a year or more, we could lose our elimination status. And that's what's concerning here. We're only in the month of April for this year, and we already have 113 cases in the United States. That's way more than what we saw in all of last year, when there were 58 total cases for 2023. Another thing that puts this in perspective, from 2020 to 2024, there were about 300 measles cases here in the U.S. 29% of all of those cases, so almost a third, occurred just recently in the first quarter here. And nearly all of those cases were in people who were unvaccinated or didn't know their vaccination status, Sarah. And we know the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, two doses of the vaccine, is 97% effective against the measles virus. That's why it's so important to make sure that we have that high vaccination coverage across the country, Sarah.
Yeah, it sounds like it's the vaccination coverage that is the main issue here. People resistant to doing that. And I've heard of people having measles parties for their kids. But kids can get really, really, really sick. And I don't think people realize just how bad it is. How should they be protecting themselves? Is there anything else?
Yeah, I mean, it can be deadly. And really, getting vaccinated is the most important thing. And also looking out for symptoms. If you have a young child who's not vaccinated, symptoms that are cold-like, fever, or that signature measles rash.
Dr. Buchholz, what's going on?
Well, I think we've had a couple of discussions about measles outbreaks here and there. I think the last one was in Florida. And this is like kind of the classic thing of again, we have a vaccine that works effectively well. when I was in med school, Fred, in the 2000s, I mean, we learned about measles as like an historical point. Like, hey, this is a disease that's really common. You won't probably see it because the vaccine's so good and everybody's getting their vaccine. You're like, okay. And, you know, here I am 15 years later and I'm having to kind of learn what measles is about, so to speak, because the vaccine rates have gone down and as a result, the infections have gone up. It's pretty simple and straightforward in terms of the math. It's extremely frustrating. And I think, you know, what bothers me with this is not so much, I think, that an individual is uncertain about vaccinating their children. That's just the product of, you know, I think pretty horrific misinformation that's out there, particularly the link of autism and childhood vaccines, which was falsified research to begin with. Clearly the person made it up and has been proven to do so. And then it just continues to, you know, proliferate. And then, you know, I think after that, there's the, you know, uncertainty, you know, surrounding the COVID vaccine and the rush to get that out there for very, very good reasons, I think is created to this uncertainty as well, that just made vaccination rates go down. And we're seeing the product of this. It's there. It's a risk. It's a matter of time before there's other outbreaks. And again, what I worry about this is not just people getting it, but certainly the vulnerable populations getting it. And it is a deadly disease. If a mom contracts measles when she's pregnant, it has huge consequences for the kiddo. These are things that just like we have the ability to deal with this. It's not complicated nor hard. And to see this happen, you know, in this day and age is, it's frustrating. I have no other word to describe it. There's no reason I should be ever seen a case of measles in my career. And yet I fully expect to. It just seems absurd to me.
Well, let's shift ground a little bit from the measles to bird flu. Still hearing about bird flu in animals. There's that one human case in Texas. What do we need to know about that? A lot of people are asking, is it safe to drink milk and eat chicken?
Oh, yeah, I think definitely that. You know, I don't think it should really affect our food supply. You know, even when we had an outbreak of bird flu, it doesn't affect our food supply, to the best of my knowledge. It really is what, you know, similar with other viruses, too. I mean, there's the whole theory of how COVID kind of first started, whether it came from bats in a market in Wuhan. I still don't know the answer to that, but a lot of viral infections, flu is no exception, kind of come from the animal population, and the mutations start in the animal population. You know, if you've ever seen a modern industrial farm, you know, where there's either a pig farm or a poultry farm, those animals are really packed condensely together. There's a high rate of mutations and changes. That's where the bird flu comes from, is from poultry farms. And the mostly infected individuals we see, infectious humans, I should say, are those that are working in that type of environment. And, you know, who knows, and nobody can really predict when it becomes into the pandemic. When I was a resident, I think it was 2008 is when we had the bird flu pandemic, and that was a pretty heady time. But since we haven't had that, and you know, I think for now, we just get these smattering of outbreaks. It seems like they're taken care of pretty quickly. But, you know, it always is a threat. I mean, we learned this from COVID, right, Fred? It's you never know when something's going to kind of mutate and then really catch fire and have a high amount of transmissiveness. But for now, I think it seems like we've had an outbreak every couple of years. It's been pretty small and minor and usually related to those involved with the poultry business. So I think for now we're okay. But the caveat being, I think if you go back and look at our recordings way back in, you know, December of 2019, I thought the same thing about COVID. And like any good doctor, I'm wrong a good amount of the time. And I was wrong there too.
Just one of the potential hazards of the trade, I guess. Hey, Dr. Buchholz, thanks so much for your time again this week. Really do appreciate it.
Yeah, Fred, as always. Thank you.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health, St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll find out about a new WashU study on accelerated aging in younger adults. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
Washington University researchers may have found a clue as to why we are seeing an increase in cancer among younger adults. Accelerated aging may be tied to the increased cancer risk. To find out more about that, let's talk with Dr. Yin Cao. Dr. Cao is an associate professor of surgery at Washington University School of Medicine and Siteman Cancer Center. She's also the senior author of this new study. Dr. Cao, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us about your study.
So the background for this study is that we are seeing an increase in cancer among individuals under age 50. And the reason for such rise is not really clear. For the past several years, we have been dedicated trying to identify risk factors that may contribute to the rising incidence, especially for colorectal cancer. And in this particular study, we try to bring in a new angle of thinking. The idea is that even if we don't know all these risk factors, our biological responses internally, such as biological aging, may help us find some clue. So that's the rationale for this study. What we have done is that we looked into biological aging from 105,000 people under age 55. And the idea is to look into whether biological aging is associated with increased risk of cancer diagnosed under age 55. And we did find a few interesting signals. For example, accelerated aging is associated with increased risk of lung cancer, GI cancer, as well as a cancer of the uterus. And what is also interesting is that we also looked into accelerating by birth cohort. And that means we want to explore whether aging is more common in younger birth cohort, adjusting for the same age. So basically, if we actually found someone born in 1965 or later, were 18% more likely to have accelerated aging compared to those born from 1950 to 1954. And this is a very important message. If validated in other populations, this means that our younger population are more likely to have accelerated aging. And this may contribute to the rising incidence of early onset cancers.
So explain to us again the difference between biological aging and chronological age.
Biological aging basically means biologically how old we are. And there are different metrics to measure biological aging. And here we use biomarker-based measurement. And chronological age is basically how old we are, calculated by date of birth. More and more, as we shown in this analysis, is that this difference between our biological age and the chronological age is actually more and more wider in younger population. So basically it means that your actual age based on biological responses or internal biological signal is older compared to your actual age. So that's the concept of accelerated aging.
We're talking with Dr. Yin Cao. Dr. Cao is an associate professor of surgery at Washington University School of Medicine and senior author of this new study. Dr. Cao, what are the implications of your study?
There can be many implications. I think this is the first time that we bring in accelerated aging to study young onset cancers. This is important because we usually think cancer is an aging disease. And aging is usually a concept being used to study disease in older population. We never thought about accelerated aging might be relevant for our younger population. So that's one conceptual innovation for this analysis. And to the patient, to the public, I think it's important to realize that we are entering an era that our younger population are potentially having more are biological older than they are actually are. So down the road, we hope to validate this finding. But at the same time, I think this opens the door not only for understanding the mechanism for early onset cancer, but hopefully also open the door to look into preventive agents to reduce or slow accelerate aging in younger populations.
Other than some sort of medicine that might be developed, is there a message for younger people on their lifestyle and what they need to do to slow down the aging process?
Oh, yes, of course. I think we all realize we are more sedentary. The younger population stay indoors for most of the time, less active. And also, there might be chronic inflammation going on. So keep healthy diet, for sure, and also keep active, reduce alcohol intake. These are more broader message. And I think this needs to be known by the younger population and being advocated.
Did these findings surprise you?
To some extent, yes, because we don't know what we will find. This is not something that has been done before, especially in the context of younger population. And what really surprised us is that we do see a couple of cancers stand out, and we want to understand the cancer-specific mechanism. There are experimental evidence supporting some of these findings, but definitely need more mechanistic research.
So one more time, Dr. Cao, just hit the highlight here. What is it that you want people to take away from this study?
The main takeaway is that accelerated aging is more common in our younger generation compared to the older generation, even at the same age. At the same time, accelerated aging is contributing to rising incidence of a few cancers. So the takeaway home message for the general public is that our younger generation needs to be more active, being engaged in healthy lifestyles, and try to reduce aging at our younger ages.
Dr. Cao, what's next? Is there a furtherance of this study that you want to do?
Sure. We want to validate the findings in a diverse population. This is very important before we continue to put this to action to implementation studies. Down the road, we are also hoping to study the mechanisms for the cancers we identified and really try to tease out the biological process that accelerated aging is contributing to the specific cancer risk at younger ages. And we also want to explore in terms of how we can help younger generation to prevent or reduce accelerated aging, either through implementing or advocating healthy lifestyle or preventive agents.
Dr. Cao, thanks so much for your time. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dr. Yin Cao is an associate professor of surgery at Washington University School of Medicine. Fox News chief medical correspondent Dr. Mark Siegel talked more about this WashU study with Fox News host Bill Hemmer and Dana Perino.
This shows something that we've known for a while, which aging isn't linear. It isn't chronologic. It's on a cellular level. How are your cells doing? How much inflammation do they have? How is the DNA doing that gives them the code to do their functions? And what this study does, it's huge. 150,000 people looked at it from the United Kingdom Blood Bank, studied in Washington University in St. Louis, presented the American Association for Cancer Research. Huge study. And to your question, it shows a 42% increase of lung cancer, 36% of uterine, and 22% GI cancers in people that were born after 1965. They showed an increased aging in their cells, and the cells, when they aged, caused more mutations, and the more mutations you get, the higher risk of cancer. And they did nine markers. They looked at things you might think are pretty easy to look at: glucose, kidney function, liver function, blood counts. We also can do this, by the way, by looking at genetics, but I like this a lot, and I think it's just a warning. What is happening to young people? What are they exposed to? Are they drinking more? Is there more processed food in your diet? Are you eating more carbohydrates? Are you eating more fats? What are you eating, and what are you exposed to in the environment that's less healthy?
This article says, and I'll turn it over to Bill, but it says you can target lifestyle interventions too: nutrition, exercise, and sleep. And it feels like we just keep coming back to those things.
I
mean,
you said 150,000
people.
Agree. 150,000 is a very large sample for any medical research. I think you would agree on that. But they're talking about people between the ages of 37 and 54. So these aren't young adults. These are almost middle-aged adults, okay? But I think you put your key on it there, and that was diet. And I just wonder if the food that's been processed, that's been put in the diet over the past several decades, is the cause for this.
Completely agree, and I agree with Dana's point, too. Let's add to food, exercise, and sleep. Are people stressed all the time? We seem to be more and more stressed. That definitely plays a role here. And what can you do about it is you can actually reverse that trend. And by the way, the one thing the study didn't do, Bill, it needs to look at it over a longer period of time. So there's hope. This is a snapshot. We need a motion picture over time if we do an intervention. If we eat better, if we sleep better, if we exercise more, as Dana has said, I think it will have improvement.
Why not also ask you about this? There's a new study out. When I recently got my mammogram, they said, do you want to upgrade and get the AI read as well? And I was like, okay, costs a little bit more, fine. I mean, to me, that maybe was a measure of security that I could have in it. There's a new study out that says it improved breast cancer detection by 20% in a study when you had AI mammography. What do you think?
I'm a huge fan of AI. Here's the deal. In Denmark, you had less false positives if you use AI, meaning you'd make less mistakes. Mm. In Sweden, they did a huge study which shows that AI actually detects it better. But here's the key. I talked to the head of breast radiology at NYU, and she said, look, it's a tool in my hands, especially in problematic spots where I'm not sure what I'm seeing. This can give me clues. And so it's the doctor plus the AI working together with the AI as the co-pilot.
Fox News chief medical correspondent Dr. Mark Siegel. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll find out about a new sickle cell treatment center at Barnes Jewish Hospital. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
Washington University and Barnes Jewish Hospital have just opened the first sickle cell treatment center in the St. Louis area. Here to talk with us about that is the director of the new treatment center, Dr. Sana Safer-Raymond. Dr. Safer-Raymond is a Washington University hematologist. Dr. Safer-Raymond, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
So first off, let's just start out by talking about sickle cell. What is it?
So it's a disease that is inherited at birth. Carriers of sickle cell disease do not have any symptoms, so many people actually do not know that they can have a child with sickle cell disease. I tell my trainees that sickle cell affects every organ the blood flows through. So our patients are at very high risk of strokes. They can get kidney issues. They can get complications with their lungs called acute chest. They can have issues with eyesight. And these are just to name a few complications. But I think the biggest reason our patients encounter acute care settings or hospitals is this acute pain crisis, which some of my patients have told me feels like there are a million needles that are piercing through every cell of your body. That is a pain that is very severe and can only be taken care of with IV fluid hydration and high dose of opiates. And that is the reason most of our patients will go to an emergency department closer to their home or come all the way to Barnes Jewish Hospital.
How common is sickle cell, and who is most at risk?
So it is predominantly seen in African-American patients, and 1 in 500 African-Americans carry a trait. We have close to 100,000 patients living with sickle cell disease in the United States, just to kind of like give you some estimate.
So tell us about this new sickle cell treatment center at Barnes Jewish. Where is it, and what do you hope to do?
And so this was a long time coming. It is located at our main campus in Center for Advanced Medicine on the third floor. I would say in the past 5 to 10 years, we wanted to provide care to our patients, which was prompt. Imagine being in such horrific pain and then going to an emergency department and then waiting hours and hours, sometimes 8 or 12 hours. To get that pain relief, that's a trauma a lot of our patients carry. There is also this stigma of when you walk into the ER saying that you have sickle cell disease and you need this dose of IV pain medication. They are misperceived as like drug seekers. Many of our patients would suffer at home, but they will not go to the ED or a hospital to get that care because of all those, I would say, experiences. I mean, and that's a PTSD that a lot of my patients carry. So what Sickle Cell Treatment Center is going to do is that it's going to be a space for them to come from home and get that treatment right there and then. So they don't have to go and tell someone, I have sickle cell disease, or this is my pain treatment plan. They just call our office. We get them in to get that treatment right where they see us at that same place, Center for Advanced Medicine. They come, their chair is ready for them. They get an IV access, and they get whatever works for them. So that same amount of IV pain medication, same amount of IV fluid hydration, same nursing staff. So I think that would be a big and positive impact on the patients we take care of.
Is this also a holistic approach to dealing with sickle cell?
So I think when we look at pain in sickle cell disease, I do feel like it's pain is not just pain. It's a lot of impact of psychosocial comorbidity that our patients carry. So there is food insecurity, there is home insecurity. And so the goal is that this place is where our community health worker will be housed. So when patients are coming in for their pain treatments, she can actually meet them in person. She can evaluate them. She can help connect them to resources they need so that, you know, whatever are their needs can be met in that space. We have referrals available for them to do physical therapy and then cognitive behavioral therapy through our pain psychology clinic. So I wouldn't say that's located there. But I think the biggest ask was, on any given day, we would have 8 to 10 patients call saying they are having a pain crisis and they really don't want to go to the ED. And a lot of times we could only accommodate 2 of them. And then unfortunately, the rest of them would have to either suffer at home in pain or resort to going to the emergency department. So I think my biggest takeaway from this is that I can provide the relief that my patients need right there and then, instead of having them wait 5-6 days sometimes to get that relief.
We're talking with Dr. Sana Safer-Raymond. She is a WashU hematologist at Barnes Jewish Hospital and the director of the new Sickle Cell Treatment Center there. What can trigger a crisis when it comes to sickle cell?
Our patients identify many reasons. Change in temperature, cold weather, any mild infection, and sometimes actually stress can trigger a vaso-occlusive pain crisis. It can happen at any time. So imagine our patients, being in school or at the workplace, and all of a sudden they start having this severe it's the worst kind of pain anyone can imagine. I mean, they can try taking their medications at home, but a lot of times they do have to be seen in an infusion space or in an ED to get that pain relief.
At the end of last year in December, we heard about this new treatment for sickle cell, but it was really expensive. What's the latest on that?
So it is gene therapy. So a lot of times our patients do not have very good matches in the unrelated donor pool for like a transplant to cure them of sickle cell disease. So the thought is that we will collect their cells and fix them and then give them back to them when they are fixed so that they can be cured of their sickle cell disease. So that's very new and exciting, and we will be offering this treatment at Barnes Jewish Hospital and Washington University. And we have many patients who have been evaluated by our bone marrow transplant colleagues who will be working with us and collaborating to kind of give this treatment to our patients. So there's a lot of excitement and many patients who are ready and kind of getting lined up and getting all that is needed to be the best candidates for this treatment. So I'm very hopeful that that would also be something that can hopefully impact and change the trajectory of this disease for our patients.
How welcome is this new adult sickle cell treatment center, do you think, among patients in the St. Louis area?
Oh, they are so happy. I would say, so I've been working on this with the Barnes Jewish. So we have the Strategic Planning and Quality Improvement Committee that has been, I would say, the greatest ally in helping improve quality of care that we are providing for our patients. And I mean, this is years in making. But every time I would see a patient in my clinic and they would say, Dr. Seth, I'm having more pain, can I get a pain treatment? And I would say, okay, I will call this infusion space. So those are usually chemotherapy infusion spaces, so they are not ours. But the hope is if there's an open chemo chair, maybe our patients can take it. And then a lot of times I wouldn't be able to find them an opening. So I would say one day we are working on this where you will have your own treatment center. So I won't have to call and ask for this chair. This will be the chair belonging to you. So I think I've been kind of prepping my patients up for this. This is coming, and people are very excited. And, you know, just the other day, I saw a patient in clinic, and she was in pain. And I said, well, do you know we have a new treatment center? And we just called downstairs. They said, send her over. So I saw her in clinic, and then she just walked down and got the pain relief she needed right there and then. So, yes, people are very happy. They're very excited. And it's a beautiful and amazing space as well. So.
Yeah, it's got to be very rewarding for you. How big is the sickle cell community in the St. Louis area?
So we, in our adult side, take care of close to 400 to 450 patients with sickle cell disease. And then I believe children's has close to 500 to 600 kids. And that is just among the two of us. And then, you know, I also feel like sickle cell disease does not just impact the patient. So when you say community with sickle cell, I would count the spouses, the significant others, the parents who have kids with sickle cell disease as part of that community. So I would say it's a huge community.
Dr. Safer Raymond, anything else you want to bring up?
No, I think it's a very exciting time to be here. In the past 5 years, I think we've added a lot of resources for our patients. A sickle cell treatment center is just one step in progress and right direction. We're actively working to, again, you know, have our patients access those gene therapy studies and hopefully start transplanting someone as soon as July or August of this year. And then trying to improve the transition of our pediatric patients to our adult clinics, like having it more smooth, and then also just kind of trying to improve the education of our providers that interface with our patients. Because again, this is it's a rare disease, and there's a lot of stigma and a misconception that a lot of providers carry about their patients as well. So one of the biggest asks from our patients was that when I walk into the ED, can they please know what I need and not have me prove to them that I am truly in 10 out of 10 pain. So there's a lot of, I would say, advancement that we are doing and lots of good things to come, I would say, in future.
Dr. Safer Raymond, thank you so much for your time today. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Fred.
Dr. Sana Safer Raymond is a Washington University hematologist. She's director of the new Adult Sickle Cell Treatment Center at Barnes Jewish Hospital. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll hear from a former KMOX reporter who's battling sickle cell disease. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
It was back in mid-December of last year when we first heard about this new treatment for sickle cell disease. At that time, I talked with then KMOX reporter Tiffany Jackson about her battle against sickle cell.
I was born with sickle cell, and the worst type is called SS, sickle cell SS. So with that, I was always told that in order for me to get treated, I would have to have a sibling in order for me to get any type of bone marrow treatment or any type of, you know, advance in medicine for this disease. So to hear that there's something being used where you don't have to have a sibling or a donor, and they're using STEM in some way, I'm still doing my research about it. That's very hopeful for the future, especially just being told a different thing when I was born. So,
how excited are you about this?
I can't even put it into words, honestly. I think the future is really bright for people who have sickle cell. When you are born with sickle cell, you get told at a young age that you have to live life with full of restrictions, you know, not going outside in cold weather, not being able to be as active in sports, not being able to, you know, just participate in a lot of things that plays a role in your childhood and your teenage years. So, I think being able to be healed from this disease is very hopeful for a lot of sickle cell patients. And I think they will be really happy to hear about the advancements.
What's it like to live with sickle cell? What's it feel like?
Well, I tell people when I describe the pain, I say it feels like glass is shattering all over your body. Every little step you try to take when you have a sickle cell crisis feels like sharp pain is just being, you know, it's just all over your body and that you really can't get relief from. And it's so hard to get that relief. The only two forms of relief that I really feel like are really helpful are blood transfusions. And blood is actually one of the biggest ways to heal sickle cell pain. You know, when I go to the hospital and I have a sickle cell crisis and they tell me, okay, we've tried these different pain medications and your pain is still not under control, the next thing we're going to do is try to get you a blood transfusion. And to hear, oh, I found a match for you and you're moving forward in the process of getting a blood transfusion, those are like life-saving words. Like, I don't know how to describe, you know, when you start to hear when someone is, you think that someone is dead and then you decide, like you start to do some treatments on them, CPR, and you start to hear a heartbeat. That's how those words of I found a blood donor, I found a match for you, that's how that feels, you know, because once you start getting the blood transfusion, you start to feel relief immediately. And I think, you know, just the overall looking into of sickle cell and what plays a role into the disease and how it can be, you know, just taking over as far as getting relief for it in the future, I think is really promising for everybody.
How many transfusions do you think you've had in your life?
I would say, wow, over my whole life, more than 15.
It's just been a way of life for you since you've had it since birth?
Yeah, it's been, honestly, I went through college. I went to Illinois State University, went through sickle cell episodes going through every 4 years. Also worked 3 jobs while I was at Illinois State University. So it was just a process of battling the pain that comes with stress because you get triggered by some of anything, weather, stress, activity. So it's just been something that I've had to try to figure out how to get a grip on my whole life. So to hear that there's actually something, you know, being made in the works of, it's just crazy.
Is sickle cell genetic?
Yeah. So I was born with it because my mom has the sickle cell trait and my dad has the trait. So I came out with a full blown disease. So, yeah, that was kind of my fate.
What was their reaction when they found out?
I think my mom, honestly, just dealing with a young child on her own, because my mom was a single mother. So it was really hard for her because you just have to go to the hospital all the time. You know, one little pain is for a person who has sickle cell, a Tylenol or a Motrin or, you know, one of those medications. It doesn't help. It's like that's like the bare minimum. So whenever I had a crisis, my mom would immediately take me to a children's hospital and stay there. My hospitalizations, the longest I've stayed in the hospital was probably 3 weeks from dealing with the pain. And every time I go to the hospital now as I get older, that admission duration is pretty long. Like I've always stayed at least a week or two every time I go. So I really try to avoid it, but it's unavoidable sometimes.
So one more time, Tiffany, your reaction to this news of the FDA approving this new CRISPR way of treating sickle cell.
I'm really shocked, and I really believe that it's promising for sickle cell patients and those who might be born with it in the future. It's so nice to know that, you know, a future generation who has sickle cell might not have to go through the pain that we're going through right now. So I'm really excited for it.
Tiffany, thanks so much. That was great.
Thank you.
That's KMOX's Tiffany Jackson talking with us back in December. Earlier this year, Tiffany took her doctor's advice and moved to a warmer climate to ease some of her sickle cell pain brought on by cold weather. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If there are parts of this show you want to hear again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section, or you can download the Odyssey app and favorite KMOX. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join me again next week for another edition of Health Matters on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.